The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Hello and good morning. Now, we love a good baddie here, a villain with a screen presence to match. You might remember my next guest as General Orlov from the James Bond movie Octopussy. Let's remind ourselves.
General Orlov.
General Gogol is presumptuous. He speaks for himself and others who cling to timid, outdated and unrealistic policies. Must I remind you, the committee, of our overwhelming superiority over NATO forces before we give it away?
Other film credits include Rambo, Beverly Hills Cop and The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. He is also a major force in contemporary theatre as director, playwright and actor. And he is coming to these shores soon with his own play, The Actor's Lament. Stephen Berkoff, good morning.
Good morning.
And what's the weather like in London?
It's absolutely drenched, pissing down. Storms are on the way, and apparently there's going to be a typhoon this afternoon.
I see. So it's a lovely sunny day in London,
I
take it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, Stephen, we touched on your Hollywood days, and earlier this year you actually published a book on the subject called Bad Guy. Was it praiseworthy of Hollywood, or were you having a go at it?
No, it wasn't particularly praiseworthy, and it wasn't negative either. It was just showing that what happens to an actor who mistakenly does a movie, a Hollywood movie, and he comes from England or from Scotland or Ireland, and you come with all the kind of goodwill and all the attention to your technique and to your passion and to your idealism, and you've gone into a real turkey of a film produced by a maniac. So this is what happens. So you come in, you're not prepared. Like when you're in battle, you're prepared. One side knows what the other side is prepared to do to you, and you know what their weaknesses and strengths are and their weaponry. But when you come in full of love, full of optimism and hope, you've got a good job, it's well paid, and then you come across the biggest bunch of morons, lunatics, psychophants, psychopaths and lunatics you've ever come across, actually you either fall apart, either you go mad or you write about it, which enables you to somehow vent all that poison.
I see. So it's a work of fiction nominally, but in some ways it's reminiscing about your days in Hollywood.
That's right. It is called Bad Guy, and it's actually on digital. You know, it's on those new kind of books, so you have to go, I don't know, through Amazon to get it. But it's an interesting study of, in a way, what happens backstage in a Hollywood movie.
And what does happen backstage?
Well, what really happens is that the work, the language, the acting, the drama means nothing. What happens backstage is, can they get enough publicity? Can they get enough kind of PR? Is the star going to really pull it in? Although she's a useless actress, but she's beautiful and she's the kind of the hot thing at the moment. And will the star come up, turn up the other star, and will he be sober and not drunk? It's so many other things are going on. And when they see the dailies, which we call the rushes, then there's a group of people in England. A director sees the rushes along with maybe his editor and his director of photography called the DP and the scriptwriter, and they look at it. But in America, you have 10 producers and 10 assistants and money men and everybody. So I really don't know how they even get films made.
And did you get instruction on how to play a baddie?
Well, you know, they expect you to come, you know, fully equipped. And I don't need to be told how to play a baddie. You know, you just look severe, don't blink, and stare at the camera. That's being a baddie. And I was being a very, very good baddie because they want the Russian baddie. And my Russian is no bad. It's very good and not very good at the moment, but I can do Russian. Like, I have feeling for that Georgian Russian accent. So I did it. And it was very funny. It was amusing. And people at the dailies, they thought, oh, it's quite a, you know, I did a few little small improvisations because the director encouraged that. Then after I've been working for a month, this gigantic slob of a producer decides, hey, no, you should. I don't think you should play in Russian anymore because we did a test and we're no longer in Cold War with Russia. Well, of course we are now. But we're no longer in Cold War with Russia and the audience thing is old-fashioned. So make him British. So here I am doing a gangster caper where I've got a Russian name and I'm doing some terrible villainy with a bunch of Russians. And for some reason, I'm English.
Right,
okay. It makes as much sense as me jumping over the moon with a trampoline set on, whatever.
Yeah.
It's so insane. You make him Polish, make him maybe French, or maybe, yeah, can do German, but no, make him British. So the gesture, the body language. So I'm making gestures as a Russian. You feel it. It comes from the stomach. These gestures, they're much more expressive. And the English don't really make any. So I had to do post-syncing of on a Russian voice suddenly becoming a very English voice, saying, oh, God, where is the girl? Where Russian, I used to say, where is the girl? We must get her. Now I have to say, hey, where is the girl? It was so ludicrous, you could not believe it.
And can I ask you, what was it like working alongside the likes of Sylvester Stallone and Eddie Murphy?
Sylvester Stallone was a dream actor. He's a great guy. He likes to be, he's come up from New York, Brooklyn, working class Italian. And when you come up with work with people who come from working class, usually, not always a generalization, they are very practical people and they know what will turn you on, what will press your buttons. And that is decency, honesty, directness, friendliness, no attitudes. And he was a great guy and very nice to work with. No, he's very, you know, this funny accent, but he's a lovely fellow and easy to be with. Eddie Murphy, the same thing. Very funny guy, very friendly, very communicative, no attitudes, no sides. He was a little bit private because he's always got these hundreds and hundreds of ideas in his head. But I tell you, those two actors were the greatest pleasure to work with, major stars. And I've worked with people who are pipsqueak little tarts who have such an... I've worked with a recently one of these in an American movie. She couldn't even say good morning. She could never say, how are you, Stephen? She just saw me and looked away. I mean, she was so full of herself, it made it very unpleasant to be with. And a lot of them are like that, unfortunately. But some of the actors who have worked their way up and had worked their way up with a certain amount of struggle and have an appreciation of what it is to fight your way up and to respect those who are also somehow struggling and fighting their way up too. But most American actors are okay, but you do get the odd one. You know, you can't look at them and you get a few of those. Weirdos.
So it's a very jaundiced view you have of Hollywood. You also did a film adaptation of your play Decadence with Joan Collins. Now, she's considered one of the ultimate divas, Stephen.
Yes, she is. And she is a bit of a diva, I have to admit. But in the end, eventually, she does deliver the goods. She's a diva and it takes a long time to get herself together. I've never known anybody who takes so long to get her makeup on, but when you see what she's got to put her makeup over, maybe you'd understand she's got to keep this legend, this myth of her beauty, which is quite something, you know, considering that she's a woman of advanced years and she still looks great, looks healthy, and most of all has a very young voice. But a bit of a diva, but once she does the job, you're going to get really good results.
So you enjoyed working with her?
I did. You know, it was a bit painful, but a lot of actors are pain to work with. It goes, you know, goes with the territory. If you're an actress, you know, you've got so much you have to deal with, unlike us men. You know, they have to worry, are they sexy? Are they getting old? Are they doing their training? Is their body looking bad? Have they got wrinkles? It takes them like 15 hours to put their bloody makeup on and then a wig on. And then all you do is you roll out of your trailer, you go to the snack bar, you grab a cheese roll, make sure your teeth are clean, your breath doesn't stink, you're on the set. But they come in, the car brings them in, there's a half a dozen ladies in the costume, they're putting them in the corset and the stockings and the shoes, and then they do the makeup and the base, and then they do this and they do that, and then they tighten them up, and then they brush up the wig, and after every take, along come the makeup people, and they're looking and they're adjusting the hair in case it's a little curl has slipped here or slipped there. And, of course, the poor women, after doing this for a while, a lifetime, they become balmy. I mean, any human being would. So working with women is a bit difficult because they are a bit balmy, and not because they're born balmy, because they're not. They're just as sane as men. Some, they say, even saner. But what they're put through is just ridiculous.
Just incidentally, where do you think your outspokenness came from, Stephen? It's clear you have very strong views on a range of subjects. You recently courted a bit of controversy with your harsh views of Twitter. But have you always been as edgy as this, as almost angry as this about things?
No, I'm happy. No, I'm not edgy. No, not at all, not at all. I have a passion about things, and I like to be a little controversial, a little provocative, because I don't want to say, I don't want to sound like some actors say, oh, it's so lovely to be here and so wonderful, and she was lovely and he was great, and oh, the director was so lovely. I say things as I see them, and that's the reason why if sometimes I do a play and it's popular, because I speak my mind. But no, there's not anger in it. And I'm happy to be going to Ireland. I love Dublin. And I've always had a very, very good response in Dublin. I love Ireland, of course, because I was brought up there. And I worked in Ireland as I did my production of Salome at the Gate Theatre 20 years ago, which was very successful.
You were brought up here. I didn't realise.
Yes, just after the war. We were all kind of... That's my real accent.
You were brought to Ireland shortly after World War II.
No, just before the end of it, because we were evacuated.
I see. From London.
You know, because of the bombs dropping in London, and a lot of kids were sent over to Dublin. And that's where I got my Dublin accent.
And how long did you spend here?
Oh, bloody hell, weeks and weeks. I remember very clearly, because I used to love the river. And we used to go always walking along. There's never much food in the shops, and it was all very poor, though you weren't at war. But it was very poor. But we used to love going along the River Liffey and looking at the big fish. And I always have a very, very nice feeling. And me and my mom, we used to go along Grafton Street and have tea in Bewley's.
A Bewley's that is still open today.
Well, it's changed. But when I was there, they used to have a big fire in a couple of rooms. And they used to have these thick slices of toast and baked beans and fried eggs and sausage. It was the most fabulous place for working class people.
Lovely, lovely. Well, it's a lovely memory to have. And as I say, Stephen, you're back in Dublin from the 1st to the 6th of September with your play,
yes.
The Actor's Lament. What is it about? Does it paint a jaundiced picture of the acting profession, or what does it do?
Really, it's... opens all the doors, all the secret boxes of what life backstage is for an actor. And I wrote it because sometimes what makes a writer, you have a joy or you have a frustration, and that stimulates you to put it into words. And the actor today is not what he was or she was. And, you know, the Actor's Lament just deals with what it's like to be an actor today. Now, perhaps years ago, in a more primitive society, perhaps, and primitive theatres, we didn't have computers and remote control lighting, but the actor was in charge of his trade. An actor would decide on the play he wishes to do, whether it's going to be Richard III or Othello, usually the Shakespeare, because this was a test for an actor. And he might branch out to modern plays in his time and do, in those days, Goldsworthy, Oscar Wilde, Graham Greene. But the actor was in charge, and he would be the person who very often will cast the other actors. He will direct even the other actors, sometimes finance the thing himself, in the same way as a painter will take his canvas and he'll buy it and get the paints and paint. A writer will sit at his typewriter and type. But now the actor no longer directs the play, although he has the most skill and the most technique from decades of acting. He is now marginalised and no longer required to direct. They were directing even to recent years. Into the era of Laurence Olivier, he was directing many of his own plays, and other actors like John Gielgud, of course. But now the director doesn't want them anywhere near. They are marginalised and sidelined. So if you're not acting, you can't show all those years and years of experience to a new or upcoming actor. So you're sidelined. Then if you want to do something, right now I want to do Hamlet, and then you have to have a producer, of course. And the producer will say, oh, well, we need a bit of a star. We need a name from telly. Can you get somebody from, you know, maybe some Doctor Who? Yes, I was recently asked. I'm directing Oedipus. It's one of my best productions. Couldn't get it into town because the producer says, oh, we need a name from the telly. Yes, let's get in touch with very nice actor from Doctor Who, which we did. They didn't want to do it, of course, and probably felt fear about it. So now actors are not judged on their acting skill, on their laurels over the years. They're judged on, oh, he was in Doctor Who, or he the EastEnders, or in Coronation Street, or he was just, oh, yeah, in Sherlock. And then these people are stepping on the stage with their weak vocal cords, with their lack of charisma, and because they've done a bit of telly.
And is that trend likely to change anytime soon, Stephen, do you think?
It's getting worse. So this is what I deal with in the Actor's Lament, about people, but it's a humorous play. It's written in verse, and we discuss it. You know, we discuss those kind of actresses who just done a telly and they're frightened to step on the stage of directors who kind of come in to the rehearsal room the first day, and they talk and they talk and they, because they want to show you how much they know, how much they've researched, how they understand all the iambic pentameter and word endings, and oh yes, we did this and did that, and it's all cobblers. All an actor wants to do when he gets to rehearsal room is say, all right, Mike, you're Claudius, Dave, Hamlet. We start off, right, here's the battlements, bang, go. That's all we want.
Incidentally, Stephen, who are your own acting idols?
Number one, Laurence Olivier. The best, the finest, the most dynamic, the greatest voice, the most independent, and had the respect of his peers in every country on earth, and was a director. And actors loved to be directed because they said, oh, my God, to be directed by an actor. He tells you how to use your voice, your gesture, not to do too much. It's a wonder to be directed by an actor. So Olivier. Of course, second, I did have the greatest respect for Albert Finney. As a young man, he was the most wonderful clown, inventive, and a voice that is just phenomenal. Peter O'Toole I saw in his early days when he did The Long, Short and the Tall. I saw that in London, and I've seen him do Bernard Shaw play. A very, very exciting, charismatic actor with a wonderful voice. They would inspire me, not only inspire me, they made me feel proud that I was in this profession. I thought, God, I'm in the same profession as them. And I was proud. Now, I look around at who's on stage and I think, do I want to be in this profession? I'm not sure. I think I've had it.
I see. Well, I presume some of this subject matter will be covered in the Actor's Lament when you bring it, the production, to Dublin in September. It's running from the 1st to the 6th of September.
Yes.
And ticket information available. And you can get tickets on gaietytheatre.ie. But for now, Stephen Berkoff, thank you very much for talking to us.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you, Stephen.
The John Murray Show on RTÉ Radio 1.